Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
So Trump met with DeSantis. It's the most unsurprising thing in the world. It's politics. I don't care how much these people hate each other. If it's necessary to create a better environment for your political future, you'll have the meeting. Very few people don't have the meeting. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. It was over the weekend. I think it was a Sunday. They're at a friend of Trump's place, a Florida real estate broker, Steve Witkoff. And they sat down. How could they work together during the general election? It was the Washington Post that reported it. DeSantis donors reached out to Politico to say they thought the meeting was pretty smart. You know, it's a great development. It makes perfect sense for Trump, DeSantis, and all Republicans. Governor DeSantis had a really strong volunteer finance team, and if we can plug in that in and help Trump, then that's what we need to do and want to do. It's important to all get together and row in the same direction. I didn't know there was another direction to row in. But I think it's an interesting argument that, well, we really needed to sit down. That way, we could get some more donors. Biden has more large-scale donors. Trump has more small-scale donors. Biden gets more, quote-unquote, business support. And Trump gets support of people who are being screwed. I mean, that's the argument, right? That's the way to describe this. So do we take anything from the meeting and say, well, this proves? I don't think so. But one of the things that we can put to the side is the idea that Ron DeSantis will be the vice presidential nominee. No, he will not. So we can end the speculation. Let's start with the basics. You can't have a president and vice president from the same state. You would cancel out the electors of that state. Nobody thinks that the Republican Party is going to have a clear path to victory without Florida. So we can end the madness right there. But if I'm Ron DeSantis, I don't want anywhere near the thing. Certainly you want to show that you can handle losing with grace, even though if it was the other way around, Trump never would. And that you want to get things done. It's also good for your political future if you're Ron DeSantis. It makes perfect sense. And by the way, that's not a dig on Trump. That's a factual telling of who the man is and what would happen. If Trump did not win the primary, he would help no one. That's not anger. That's just fact. I'm voting for the guy. I'm voting for the guy. So we don't have to discuss where I'm at. I just think that honesty matters. But does the meeting matter? There are occasions where meetings like this are really good to help a unification of the party. I put forward to you that there is no unification of the party outside of, man, Joe Biden's really terrible. And I wonder if people recognize the truth in that statement. Because that statement is saying that even if Trump should win, and over Biden, I would absolutely want him to win without question. I want this. The party is not okay. Take a look at this whole thing regarding Speaker Mike Johnson. And you still have Marjorie Taylor Greene. You still have her out there wanting to have a no confidence vote, a motion to vacate. Democrats are saying, nope, we ain't going to go for this. We are not going to engage in this. And if Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to put this forward, we're voting no. We are not interested in vacating the chair. She needs us to be able to do it. We're not going to have it. And this came up to Speaker Mike Johnson, and he was kind of unaware that Democrats said this.
House Democratic leadership just announced that they would vote to table a motion to vacate, effectively saving your job for you. What's your reaction to that?
First, I've heard of it. Look, I have to do my job. We have to do what we believe to be the right thing. What the country needs right now is a functioning Congress. They need a Congress that works well, works together, and does not hamper its own ability to solve these problems. And so we saw what happened with the motion to vacate the last time. Congress was closed for 3 weeks. No one can afford for that to happen. And, so we need people who are serious about the job here to continue to do that job and get it done. So, I have to do what I believe is right every day and let the chips fall where they may.
Yes, you do. Marjorie Taylor Greene was in a spot because she had discussed this and gotten tough about it and how dare Mike Johnson. And I can appreciate a level of anger there. You don't get the border funding done, yet you allow all of these specific bills to get voted on about funding Ukraine, funding Israel, funding Taiwan. And the only thing that doesn't actually get through the Senate is border funding. It's real anger. I'm not saying no to that real anger. I am saying that as a matter of strategy, vacating the chair or vacating the speaker position is a ridiculous idea. And Mike Johnson has the support of who? Donald Trump. Yet Marjorie Taylor Greene went forward anyway because she had to satisfy what? Her fans. Not her constituents, her fans. So when I say to you that it doesn't matter if DeSantis is meeting with Trump, or Trump called the meeting, whatever it is, and they're going to hang out, and DeSantis is going to campaign, all this doesn't matter. The party still has an issue. Two things can be true at the same time. America can decide that anything is better than that old man who can't remember whether he's talked to dead people repeatedly.
Name me one.
I can name you two. Maybe by the end of the week, I can name you more. Maybe I can name for you when you're talking about Egypt and you think it's Mexico. Maybe I can name for you all the times you don't know how to get off of stage. Maybe I can name for you just this past weekend at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, where clearly you're not quite sure how to eat dinner. You're not sure how to eat the meal. The fork became very peculiar to you, so you went for the dinner roll, except you were just kind of fighting the dinner roll, and then you went back to the dinner. Lord only knows if you actually swallowed the bite you took. It's an odd video if you haven't seen it. There's no possible way this guy's president of the United States. There is no possible way this guy is president.
But his whole place sucks.
Well, not the whole place, but that is certainly nutty. The party has issues. And win or lose, and I'm certainly hoping for a win, the party is going to have to figure out its issues. This is the problem, as I see it, with idol worship, and is the problem with fiefdoms. I have been utilizing an expression as of late that everyone is the Mao of their own digital fiefdom. It's a weird thing to say, but I believe it to be true. When I'm talking about Mao, I'm talking about Mao Zedong, I'm talking about Cultural Revolution, I'm talking about bringing about communist China, where you are the absolute ruler, and anybody who should disagree with you gets the dunce cap and goes through the struggle session. If everyone is looking to build out their own brand, who is looking to build out the policy of the party to create a better America for all of us? This is an issue. And I feel that it is more of an issue on the political right than it is the political left. And you say to me, Tony, how dare you? Whoa. The political left is a mess. Is a Jew-hating, America-hating mess. We don't have to do, we agree on that. But the political right doesn't have right now a conversation for tomorrow, a conversation for an uplift, a conversation for a series of policies that will create better futures. I want them to, and I want them to be focused on that. And you could say to me, well, we're a party that believes in lower taxes. Great. But I saw more spending under Trump. Will I still see more spending under Trump? I saw tariffs under Trump. I get the position of tariffs, and for the record, on this show, on my morning show heard in Indianapolis on 93.1 FM, WIBC, I stated that I oppose tariffs, but I understand the methodology. If China's not coming to the table, this one's not coming to the table, nobody's engaged in any level of respectable trade deals, you got to wake them up. You got to wake them up. And you got to say, all right, well, we're not going to put up with this anymore. So tariffs it is. Tariffs are taxes. And I only feel one way about taxes.
It stinks.
But the tariff made sense to try and create the opportunity to create an opportunity. That's what it did. And so I was fine with it. Now, I'm not the one, I mean, we all deal with it, but I am not the one who specifically dealt with it. I had at the time, I haven't done a roundtable in a while. I think I'm due. I had a roundtable with farmers. They taught me much. And what they said was, like, we know we're the ones who take the hits, but we're okay with that. It's like a trade deal with China. We want a trade deal with China, where China's, for example, buying our soybeans. China, by the way, desperate to find other sources of soybeans, specifically South America. Soybeans is how they feed their hogs. Their hogs are a massive food delivery or food source for the people of China. They need to feed them. The soybeans do it. America makes a tremendous amount of soybeans. They don't want to give American farmers those dollars because they don't want to support the United States. You see that issue. But they were willing to take the hit on this or that or the other in order to get the trade deal because they knew it would be better off for everybody overall. It was fascinating to hear farmers say, well, put ourselves on the line. We know we're taking the hit. We're okay with that. But if Trump wins, has anybody asked what we're going to say about spending? Because look at the spending under Biden. Look at the spending under Trump and look at the spending under Biden. Are we going to get this under control with Donald Trump? And are there going to be members of Congress who are willing to say we can't have this spending if Trump's president because they fear what their base and what their fan base is going to do? So even though they know the spending is too much, they go along with it because they got to make sure that their income still comes in from, I don't know, speeches or a book or whatever the case may be. We have got a real divide in the party amongst those who come from the philosophical brand. If you want to call that William F. Buckley, if you want to call it Locke and Burke, if you want to discuss it as liberty-based people versus the populist-based people who are simply disgusted by a corrupt government and want to, A, do them in, which I understand, but that is not necessarily on top of a philosophy. And if the philosophy is, don't worry about tomorrow, spend today, that's not a good philosophy. And if the philosophy is, whatever gets me a victory is what counts, that's not a good philosophy. If the philosophy of the political right is that we are pro-life, and you have Donald Trump saying, well, maybe, well, then what's the philosophy? What is the baseline? What is the basis of the theories that move a political party forward and attract people to it? As opposed to just going with certain whims and dealing with political wins. This is why I argue that the meaning is fine. I'm fine with it. But all is not well. And we should be aware of this because we're the ones who are going to have to solve this. The election will come and go, and the political right will still have to engage the fight between the principles of conservatism and the righteousness of populism. That's coming to an America near you. in just a few months. I'm Tony Katz. So the Dow is down 375. The NASDAQ, I gotta clean my glasses. That's right, I wear glasses. Don't worry, I make them look hot. The NASDAQ is down 180. Tony Katz today. And the Fed is making it as clear as day. There will be no rate cuts in 2024, and you've all been had. Inflation isn't going anywhere. There was a story that fast food prices have outpaced inflation over the decade. As a matter of fact, a quarter pounder with cheese meal at McDonald's is double the price that it was 10 years ago. It was $5.39 10 years ago, and now it's $11. Double in 10 years. Well, here, I think, is the story. That this is CNBC reporting that, and this is the headline, McDonald's and other big brands warn that low-income consumers are starting to crack. Well, I don't like the use of the word crack there. It's they're saying, I can't do this anymore. If a Big Mac, fries, and a Coke is $11.50, the fast food has lost its meaning economically. It doesn't provide a value anymore. If it doesn't provide a value, I'm not going. It was supposed to be quick. It was supposed to be affordable. And you've taken at least the affordability part away. The CEO, who is Chris Kempczinski, was on an earnings call today. Consumers continue to be even more discriminating with every dollar that they spend as they faced elevated prices in their day-to-day spending. And it's not just them. 3M, Scotch Tape, Post-it Notes, they're telling analysts they're, quote, seeing continued softness in consumer discretionary spend. Newell Brands, N-E-W-E-L-L, their CEO, saying it's inflation that's messing up the business. His name is Chris Peterson. The categories we compete in remain under pressure with consumers continuing to carefully manage their discretionary spend as the cumulative impact of inflation on food, energy, and housing costs has outpaced wage growth. Now, we have two choices in this situation. We can believe the people who actually sell the products. We can believe the CEOs. Or we can believe Jared Bernstein, who wants to tell us that a 1.6% GDP, well, that's actually good if you fudge the numbers.
Certainly in the mix, it's one of the components, but it gets a weight that's much lower than consumer spending. Consumer spending is 70% of nominal GDP. Add investment and you're north of 80%. Now, if you look at this first quarter result, consumer spending, real, and investment together grew at a 3% annualized rate. And that's almost, think of that as almost a core GDP measure, something that takes out the more volatile inventories or net exports or even the government accounts, which can bounce up and down.
Why look at 1.6 when you can simply lie to yourself? Your choice on who to believe. The Biden administration or the CEOs who have to figure out how to keep a company afloat when people are being very, very particular about their discretionary spending. I think the part that they're not admitting to is that there is no discretionary spending. It's not there. If the cost of goods, as described, has outpaced the increase in wages, there is no discretionary spending. And if there is, it's going for milk and eggs and whatever part of the mortgage people can afford. Which now has me wondering, what's happening with foreclosures? I'm Tony Katz.
for and likely stoking these campus protests today. William, what'd you find out? Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. At least $1.3 million came from two liberal foundations, the Rockefeller Brothers and George Soros, but there are many other Democrat-led dark money groups that funnel money outside the IRS reporting structure that pay for talking points, posters, recruiting, activists who go campus to campus to organize these protests, but even universities bankroll anti-Israel groups through the student activity fee.
That is William Lajeunesse, who still, after all these years, does great work talking with Bill Hemmer on Fox News about how in the world are these events, these protests, funded? Tony Katz today. In order to discuss this, we have to take a step back. And this is a conversation of what happens when we sleep. The question that I get asked, and this has been true for years, the question I get asked more than any other is, why are Jews liberals? And there's a series of possible theories here. Ideas. Some come from Norman Podhoretz, some from Larry Greenfield. One of the interesting ones is the idea of fear of the cross, which is the theory that Jews take a look at the history of being persecuted. They don't want to be persecuted. So what they do is they align themselves with the underdog so that they are always in some level of a friendship, as opposed to being thought of as some level of, wait for it, oppressor, and then they are the ones who will be attacked. The foolhardy nature of that can be seen in everything that we see right now. You saw Jewish groups, we stand with Black Lives Matter. We stand with this group about gay rights. We stand with this group about a leftist this and progressive that. And then October 7th came and 1,200 Israelis were killed and raped and kidnapped. And these groups said, whatever. They didn't care. You had rabbis and synagogues, part of these multi-faith organizations, and they were standing up for good things. And the minute October 7th happened, these multi-faith organizations ran for the hills. Oh, we don't care what happens to Jews. As a matter of fact, good. And anybody who is still like, well, we need to be a part of these groups. We have to have a seat at the table. These are the people who are going to get killed first. Or they're going to make the best slaves. It's one or the other. Our problem, guys, is that for us, this is probably more frustrating. And I would say for me on a personal level, but that would be to assume that somehow you haven't been personally frustrated and I don't buy into that, that somehow I'm experiencing something that you're not. We have known this to be a problem. We have discussed this as an issue. We've discussed it amongst ourselves here on the show. We've discussed it with family. We've discussed it over a cigar. We've discussed it at a barbecue. We discussed it at church. And yet here it is now. And so people are like, I can't believe this is happening. And we're like, what do you mean you can't believe this is happening? I can't believe it took this long. And so that leads to the question, the other question that I'm getting asked all the time. Were they always anti-Semites, or is this new? How did this happen? And the answer to that question is very slowly and then all at once. We have known for the past 50 years that forces that had no belief in America and wanted to do harm to America were the ones in charge of teaching our kids. What did we think that would breed? What did we think that would lead to? If you knew that the professors were a problem and the institutions were a problem and education was a problem and what it was teaching was hate and what it was teaching was division and your kid went to college as a freshman as a pretty well-adjusted, decent man or woman and they came back hating you and telling you that everything you know about history is a lie because you were taught wrong, what did you think was going to come? Well, a lot of parents may not have actually asked themselves that very, very difficult question. I think that's wrong, but I think it's also true that they may not have asked themselves that very, very difficult question. But now, once we get past that, which, by the way, you could do entire dissertations on, you get to the fact that you see these protests everywhere, and they're all the same. And these encampments they've made, they're all doing the same thing? Well, okay, it could be copycat. This is how you do it. But they all bought the same tent? Wait a second. Are you telling me that this is the only tent available at Dick's Sporting Goods? No one even thought to make their own. They all have the same damn tent. How is that? And then you have schools where the faculty are trying to stop police from doing their job when they're called in by the university, because the faculty supports the students and supports the bigotry and supports the dehumanization and the physical attack on Jews, which is why you have to fire the professors and fire the administrators. Let them sue you. Tell them to screw off. They have to get fired. Tell them to learn to code. Nope, wait, that would involve actual work. And as we know, that's not why professors are professors. In the main, you know I'm right, leave me alone. How in the world do they get the same tents? These faculty who are trying to stop the police from doing their job, they're wearing these vests like they're construction workers. It's like they all decided to dress up for Halloween and they all came as the one guy from the Village People. Seriously, nobody thought to be the Indian? That's racist. Aw, crap. How did they get the vests? Somebody had to buy all the vests. And that's when you start recognizing, my God, this is all funded. This is all organized. How in the world did they organize this so quickly? And if you have thought about that for a half a second, it's the moment that you went from saying, how, to, oh. In the same way that they have been trying to turn your children against you and you against your spouse or against yourself, they have the organization well in hand and well understood. It's not that they just got to organizing. This is who they are. And this is true, certainly politically, that people on the political right are much more independent-minded folk. So they do not lend themselves to this kind of organizing. It's not what they do. And these kind of folk have themselves tied into government, as opposed to people on the political right who have a natural and, I believe, proper kind of hesitation about being connected to government. Now, you stay over there, as opposed to, no, we'll be in it and then we'll use it to our advantage. On a federal level, sure, but on a state level, on a local level, and on a university level, where they dominate academia, and if you're on the political right, of what power do you think you actually have that you can exert? All things, in the end, boil down to follow the money. And so William LaJeunesse, over there at Fox News, seems to have done just that in looking at how these groups got created and how the funding works.
Who are they? What do they want? And where is their money coming from? These protest groups go by different names. The largest, Students for Justice in Palestine, receives funds, among others, from a liberal New York foundation called Westpac, as well as activity fees charged to each student by their university, according to the watchdog group NGO Monitor. Yet none of these universities would tell us how much student money is given to pro-Palestinian groups.
The fact that universities now are hiding or giving excuses for not providing that information when they absolutely have to know what that status is something that is very, very much, I say, counter to democratic processes.
Democratic processes is not the objective. The objective is the objective. And the objective, as we know it, as we started discussing it on October 8th, the objective is us. The objective is the way of life. The objective is not Israel. The objective is not Jews. That's just the way to get to the thing that is the objective, which is tearing this all down. They're controlling the buildings on Columbia's campus. You think this is about protesting how Israel is engaged in Gaza against Hamas? None of this is about that. None of it. None of it. So the fact that they won't tell you also shows that telling you transparency is not a value that they desire, uphold, or think is important. The goal is the goal, and everything else is nonsense, and you don't need to know, and they don't feel the need to tell you. Why? Because they control the system, and they don't have to tell you. Nobody's going to force them to tell you. And even if they did, they would be replaced by somebody else, and somewhere down the road, they would be rewarded with another position. That's how well organized, that's how well funded they are.
Another group, the U.S. Campaign for Palestinian Rights, claims to have led 43 protests or demonstrations last year. It provides banners and signs, salaries and stipends to hire fellows and activists who go campus to campus, running campaigns demanding the U.S. cut ties with Israel. Among their fellows, Malaka Fana, who disrupted a private dinner at UC Berkeley, and Craig Burkhead Morton, who, according to the Yale Daily News, was arrested for trespassing.
Now, you say to me, okay, they're funded. Okay, they're paid to be disruptive. But how does this provide them any value? I can answer this question, but it's going to sound foreign. It's going to sound ridiculous. I have argued many times that being a content creator ain't easy. It's hard out here for a pimp. But seems that on the political left, people make all sorts of content all the time. They get funded. How is that possible? Because for the political right, funding involves a desire for a return. We see things as a business opportunity and therefore through a business model. The left sees things not as a business opportunity, but as an opportunity. And they see it as a way of moving about their desires. Well, the desire is what? Tearing it all down? Well, yeah. But how does that help them? Because the people funding this will be able to have the control and they'll still be just fine. But they have, through an ideology, a perverse view of humanity, and humanity must be governed by whom? Them. Where do you think the idea of elitist comes from? How is it possible that the World Economic Forum, there are people having a conversation about the idea that you should eat bugs? Bugs will make it better. This was the World Economic Forum where Hubert Keller, who's a Swiss banker, was saying, you know what our problem is? Coffee is our problem.
Coffee example, I'd love just to give you the chance to expand on that.
Basically, the coffee that we all drink emits between 15 and 20 ton of CO2 per ton of coffee. So we should all know that this is every time we drink coffee, we are basically putting CO2 into the atmosphere.
Your coffee is killing us, so you can't drink coffee. You can't drink coffee. But he's still going to have coffee because, after all, he's the one keeping us safe from ourselves. When people say, you know, this is about control, some people laugh, oh, don't be ridiculous. Well, of course that's what it's about. Ideological desires lead to, of course, the need for more control. And capitalism, which allows the vast amount of people to have the opportunity to thrive, means that that's too many people who can think for themselves and don't need to be controlled by them. And so tearing it all down is the goal. And so the funding of the groups and the systems to help tear it down has been going on for years. And to do that, they got control of academia because we ceded it to them. It's a really solid piece on where the money comes from and how it works. But this didn't happen overnight. It happened very slowly. And as you can see now, all at once. I'm Tony Katz. Republic First Bank got seized? When the bloody heck did this happen? Did this just happen right now? Republic First Bank, which is out of Philly, failed. So this was on Friday. It got shut down by Pennsylvania bank regulators. I had not heard the story until right now. The FDIC making the deal where a group called Fulton Bank bought the assets of Republic First, which is, you know, always the way it is, right? Somebody's getting a sweetheart deal somehow. This is the first I've heard of a bank failure. But I think the thing to pay attention to here, while I'm just coming across this, is that this is a regional lender. And we certainly know that people like the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, have put pressure on regional banks. Keep an eye on this. This is Tony Katz Today.